Hello, everybody, and welcome to this new episode of Spanish Loops. This is Frank Gloria from Traveling Steps. On the other side, we have Jorge. Are you there?
Jorge, yes. Jorge, yeah, here I am. Hola, Francisco, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Not bad, thank you so much. And yes, this is Jorge Ramón from Traveling with Jorge. And here we are with a very special guest that we have invited, and he has graciously accepted this invitation. We're going to have him in a future chapter, not so far from now, with another topic. We're not going to talk about that topic. That would be a surprise. But today, we're going to talk about something that he's very passionate for. Not only a colleague, great, great person that knows absolutely everything you could imagine about classical music. He's also an excellent friend.
So yes, great friend, amazing local guide in Madrid, and his passion, it's all about music. So today, we are welcoming Federico García Barroso to talk about Spanish tenors, sopranos, the big names of Spanish classical music. Federico, welcome to Spanish Loops.
Hola, amigos y amigas. I'm so happy to be with you. Hello, everybody. Happy and ready to answer your questions and to talk a little bit about the Spanish classical music and the Spanish lyric music, the world of opera and zarzuela, Spanish opereta.
That is precisely what we're going to focus, precisely more opera than anything else. If you want to give a little intro about everything else, but, you know, we're going to focus more in singers that there's put or placed Spain in the world, especially in the 20th century. Federico, would you give us please a little bit intro about generic opera? What's the opera? What is the purpose of it? And how you got hooked into that world, please?
Well, I just enjoyed music always since I was a child. I had a good ear for languages and music, and it is actually my profession. Come on, my profession is to be a tour guide, but my vocation or my passion is to be a singer, or at least to enjoy music and singing. From the beginning, what can I tell you? In the same way that there are other kids that they are more into sports or other things, I was a teenager and I really, really, really enjoyed classical music, and also very soon the world of opera. Yeah, spontaneously, I guess.
What was the very first record of opera or classical music that you remember you bought out of your money?
I perfectly remember, because I was, I think I was 14 or 15 years old. And those were the days of the arrival of the CD player. Oh, bye-bye those records. And those were the time of those CDs. And I would just wait until that moment in which my parents could actually buy me a CD player. And my first CD was actually Tchaikovsky's Masterpieces, including 1812 Overture, Nutcracker, the ballet, and 1812 Overture, as I said, and then Romeo and Juliet. You see, that was the highlights of Tchaikovsky. That was actually my first CD. And now I have many, 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 many more, as you can imagine.
I can assure that you have many. I would say that you have probably more than 1,000 records, don't you?
Yeah, actually, but it is not only because of my devotion. It's also, I'm so lucky to be able to say that traveling for so many years all over Europe, guiding people all over Europe, I always could find that moment for myself to go to the best CD store and to get wonderful music from each country. And I still do that nowadays, searching for those CDs online, of course, but I'm still one of those guys who is still buying CDs. I'm still doing that. So that is my personal hobby, and that is my passion.
So you are one of those rare specimens that you still want to get the physical CD or record, however you call it, in your hand and play it in your CD player. Is that right?
Absolutely rare, absolutely unique, absolutely weird. And yes, because that's what I do. I love to make music tangible, to take the CD, to open that, to take that booklet and to read something about the composer and that wonderful piece.
Well, Fede, let's enter into music. At the beginning, when you introduced yourself, you have said that we have opera and we have zarzuela. Zarzuela, I would say, is a Spanish opera, little opera. Can you please give us a little hint of the difference between opera and zarzuela?
Opera is the greatest, the most complete work of art. You see, talking about stage work, it's not only about singing, it's about performing, it's about occasionally dancing. It is the work. Actually, that is the meaning of the word opera in Italian language, which is conceived as the work of the works. Opera, talking about stage works. And the thing is that we always find, sometimes, you see, some listeners could consider the opera is too dense in some occasions. And then we find that kind of branch, which is, in English language, we could just call it about operetta. Operetta has actually, those branches that we find are actually quite popular, the operetta in German language, in those Germanic countries. Also in France, the French operetta. Anyways, it's absolutely beautiful. And then in Spain, that Spanish operetta, it's called zarzuela. Zarzuela. And that is the point. I can tell you the meaning in a moment, excuse me, the meaning of the word zarzuela. I just want to say that in general, the works are not so long. They are actually briefer. They are actually more accessible in every meaning. And the music is actually easy listening music, in most of the cases, happy stories, and a kind of musical genre that is more accessible to people that do not need to be so cultivated or so sophisticated. That would be, in my opinion, the main difference between opera and operetta. In the case of Spain, Spanish, zarzuela.
So let's recap a little bit. Opera, let's say, is worldwide, and Spanish opera is more local, although there are some other places that they are fans of the Spanish operetta. So what is the big difference in between both of them? You just mentioned just quite a few things about it, but when was the developing of that branch of the opera to become what is the zarzuela today?
Well, we actually find, if we just go back in time, we find how the Spanish zarzuela, you have to consider, my friends, we are in those Baroque days, in those, I can tell you, those late 1500s and the beginning of the 1600s, the first performances of these musical genre were born in a palace located in the outskirts of Madrid called Zarzuela Palace, because zarza, my friends, means dry bushes. And that palace is located surrounded by those dry bushes called zarzas. And just because the first musical performances took place in that palace, surrounded by those zarzas or dry bushes, the musical genre would be called zarzuela. In those days, it was a kind of a small genre, musical genre, where they were occasionally singing and dancing a little bit, but it was more about recitative. It was more about speaking rather than singing. And then we had to wait in time just for a few centuries when finally, in those late 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s, we find some of the most wonderful masterpieces in the history of Spanish zarzuela by those mostly local composers.
Well, that was a very interesting thing about discovering the origins of the word zarzuela. I had no clue about that. Seriously, that was really fascinating.
Neither did I. Thank you for that introduction. So now let's talk about the musicians. In Spain, in history, we've had some amazing musicians. One of them from my hometown, Julián Gayarre, he's from the 19th century. But I would say that more in modern times is when this 20th century, we've had some amazing top of the list tenors and sopranos, people like Plácido Domingo or Montserrat Caballé. So, Fede, for you, who are the top representatives of Spanish voices?
Yes, I'm happy to say, Francisco, I'm happy to say that you mentioned that extraordinary tenor that we had in those 1800s called Gayarre, Julián Gayarre, who came from Pamplona, from Navarra. It's actually a pity to say Julián Gayarre was our Spanish Caruso, but unfortunately, he didn't arrive not on time to the birth of the gramophone. So nowadays, we listen to the voice of Caruso, and unfortunately, we couldn't hear the voice of Gayarre because he died of a horrible pandemic in those days. And that is actually still nowadays a tragedy for our musical history.
Isn't it true that there is a statue to homage him nearby the Royal Palace?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, in Madrid, we find actually a monument where we find the relief of the face of Julián Gayarre when he died when he was 44 years old. And that monument is located precisely in front of the house where he actually passed away and where he had moments of glory inside the Teatro Real, the Royal Theater of Madrid, with Adelina Patti, a woman with an Italian name who was actually from here, from Madrid. One of the most spectacular performances in the history of that theater happened with Julián Gayarre and Adelina Patti. And that monument is just located there. There is another one which is spectacular, but that is located at his hometown in Roncal, in Navarra. But yes, it's actually a beautiful thing to be there next to the theater and to see there the face of Julián Gayarre.
And actually, it's a shame what you said, that yes, that he didn't reach the arrival of recordings, and it's a shame because his voice was supposed to be one of the best at the time in the whole world. Well, please, Fede, I'm sorry I did interrupt you. So would you please continue what you were going to say about our singers of the 20th century regarding Plácido Domingo, Montserrat Caballé? We also have Josep Carreras, and also we have Teresa Berganza. So let's go one by one. Please give us your inputs about these beautiful, wonderful voices.
Well, it is, yeah, I mean, there are many out there, but we just have to choose some of them. And that is why we were thinking about these four. You see, first, the soprano, Montserrat Caballé from Barcelona. She's actually a woman that just passed away a short time ago. And she has been classified as one of the most remarkable divas in the history of classical music, in the history of opera, mostly playing those roles of those Italian divas in the opera, of those operas by Verdi, Puccini, and so many others. Mostly she has been singing the repertoire in Italian and French. She was one of the greatest, and she has left us a short time ago, one of the greatest sopranos in the history of classical music in the 20th century.
She actually passed on October the 6th, 2018. So
yes, exactly.
Not so long ago, unfortunately.
Yeah,
She was 85 years old, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, she just died, you see, when she was 85 years old. And that is, this is the magic of destiny. If I tell you that our next guest, Teresa Berganza, the
beautiful voice, by the way.
Wow, unique voice, a woman born in Madrid. Teresa Berganza was born the same year that Montserrat Caballé, 1933. And also she left us just a short time ago in 2022 when she was 89 years old. A woman that was always singing, performing, and also a very important person in the world of teaching singing, you know, how to sing in the best way to those new generations. Teresa Berganza has been classified as probably the best Carmen ever, and also a wonderful woman singing all the Rossini operas.
So Federico, what's the difference among them regarding singing? You just said that Montserrat Caballé, she was excellent and a diva. We know also that Teresa Berganza was also a diva, but wasn't there a different scales among both of them, or is it just me?
No, it's just I'm actually in the world of classical music or singing, classical singing, lyric singing. Those are the voices. I mean, that is mathematically shown in that way. A soprano is actually a woman who goes to those highest notes ever. Actually, there is a kind of a specific soprano that goes over the top, and those are the coloratura sopranos. I mean, that term is used in English, and it's actually an Italian word, coloratura, telling you something about that virtuous way of singing. And those are the sopranos that I really like, nightingales. I mean, we could actually talk about the queen of the night in Mozart's magic flute. And everyone knows that era. That is a coloratura soprano because she goes over those thinkable highest notes. Then behind those sopranos, or let's say under, that is, would be the word, under the sopranos, we have that mezzo, Italian term called medium, mezzo soprano. I have to say that most of us, people who love classical music, we love the mezzo sopranos because they go deeper and they take you to the roots of earth. And some of those arias for mezzo soprano are absolutely some of the most beautiful arias composed for a female voice. And finally, we find the lowest scale are those contraltos, who are the women with the lowest tunes in human voice, in female voice.
So recapping is that Montserrat Caballé was a soprano, and Teresa Braganza was a mezzo soprano.
Exactly.
Okay. So please, Federico, we can tell that you are an expert in this field, and I'm just getting a little bit overwhelmed here. Okay, so considering your knowledge, and we have mentioned Montserrat Caballé and Teresa Braganza, please give us your favorite piece that you consider that it could be a masterpiece from Montserrat Caballé, and the same thing with Teresa Braganza, please.
Well, I mean, it's actually becomes a little bit difficult. It's not so.
I know,
so,
I know.
Not so fun, no. Okay, just thinking about that wide repertoire, I'm just thinking about Montserrat Caballé. One of the best performances has always been thinking about Puccini, the Italian composer. Puccini. There is a world famous piece from the opera Gianni Schicchini, which if I tell the title of the opera, I know many people might necessarily know that, but if I say "O mio babbino caro," which means "Oh my dear daddy," you see, is one of the most remarkable arias for soprano, and in my opinion, Montserrat Caballé was one of the best ones performing that. Oh mio bambino caro. And then there is a moment in which the whole audience goes in silence, listening to the diva. Probably Maria Callas and Montserrat Caballé, in my opinion, were the best ones. I'm just also thinking about Renata Tebaldi, the Italian diva. But in my opinion, Montserrat Caballé is undoubtedly one of the best ones singing Puccini.
Did you ever see Montserrat Caballé live?
Yeah, I was quite lucky to. I have to say, I'm actually quite lucky to say that I had the privilege to see all these four people, Caballé, Braganza, and the tenors. Yes, I'm. It's a privilege to be there, boom, and to meet them and to see them performing. And not everyone is able to say that.
And what about your favorite piece about Teresa Braganza?
She has been, Teresa Braganza, what can we say about this woman that has been an extraordinary, probably the best mezzo soprano in the history of classical music in the 20th century. Her role in all those operas by Rossini. Rossini is actually a composer with happy melodies, but those arias are extremely difficult to execute. When we talk about female voices, they really seem to be nightingales. Una voce poco fa. Di Rossini, the barber from Seville. She plays also the Cenerentola, the Cinderella, the opera by Rossini. She's absolutely muse of, I would say, in Rossini's operas. But in my opinion, come on. Teresa Braganza is probably the best Carmen ever. Bizet's opera, Carmen, which is probably the most known opera in the whole world. Teresa Braganza, as not many other did, she performs that beautiful and wonderful habanera. L'amour est enfant de bohème. Il est jamais connu de loi. Si tu ne m'aimes pas, je t'aime. Si j'entends bien prendre garde à toi. She's absolutely unique.
Did you see her singing that?
Yes.
Oh, was, lucky you.
Yeah.
Lucky you. Wow.
By the way, Federico, thank you so much for singing. I mean, it's like, what a privilege to have you.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, I think Montserrat Caballé especially, it's very well known here in Spain because she is the person who adapted or got closer to normal people. Because we tend to think that opera, well, I think it's not. It's a little bit elitistic and people don't go to see opera because it's a snob thing and it's so expensive, la, 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 la. But Montserrat Caballé, she really made it more accessible to people. And I mean, she even worked with some pop stars or rock stars to make her voice accessible to everybody. I'm talking about 1992 Olympic Games.
Yes, that is actually, that happened. Well, we are all still thinking about Freddie Mercury, how Freddie Mercury recorded with Montserrat Caballé that spectacular song called Barcelona. Mm-hmm. For the Olympics 1992. It's sad to say that Freddie Mercury knew that he would not be alive in that moment of the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. And that is the reason why, well, previously they recorded the song just on time. They made a cool video about that. And now all of us, we can enjoy that spectacular song, which is a wonderful fusion of classical and pop rock music. And well, some people may like it, some people may not, but the piece is actually quite unique and it's there to be enjoyed by anyone.
And also, I mean, the great voice that Freddie Mercury had as well. I mean, they were like kind of in the same level when they were singing this, that piece of pop music together with those tones with Montserrat Caballé. I have to say, every time I hear that piece of that record, or however you want to call it, it's kind of an unique piece. Is there any more artists that they have, like, for instance, this other lady we're talking about, Teresa Braganza, has he ever joined the pop music or did any approach or any contribution?
Well, yes, in a moment we're going to talk about how José Carreras, he did the same in those Olympics with Sarah Brightman, the muse of Andrew Lloyd Webber, and that song called Friends for Life, Amigos para Siempre. Yeah. But we talk specifically about Teresa Berganza. Yeah, she and Plácido Domingo, they actually joined this pop band in the history of Spain in those 80s called Mecano. They actually composed José María Cano. He composed that opera or operetta called Luna, Moon. And then Teresa Berganza and Plácido Domingo goes pop. And that is actually a kind of interesting experience.
You mean to tell me? I mean, Mecano is one of my favorite groups, Francisco. We are more or less of the same generation. You liked Mecano in those days, right?
It was my number one band back then.
Yeah, but I'm really shocked about what Federico just said right now. I had no clue that that opera written by one of the composers of Mecano, José María Cano, was sung by Plácido Domingo and Teresa Berganza. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Another remarkable people. That is the moment in which they just join. José María Cano, he goes obviously into pop and rock music, and that is the only incursion that he had in classical music with the, I mean, to enter the world of classical music with Teresa and Plácido, that means a lot. And the music is there to be enjoyed by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, Federico, I think we have talked about the girls, and yes, they're masterpieces. But what about the boys? We have José Carreras, Plácido Domingo, two amazing, I assume both of them tenors.
Exactly, yeah. Talking about the male voices, in the same way that we explained to our friends something about those female voices, let's go from the highest tunes to the lowest tunes, and then we find those tenors. I mean, in the world of singing, you see, they said that there are two worlds. A world of singers and a world of tenors, because everyone wants to be a tenor. And then those tenors are, showing to us the beauty of music with those highest tunes. That would be the highest tune in a male voice is actually the tenor. Then if we just go down in that scale, we will find very soon those baritones. Those baritones that are some of the, just a little bit deeper, just a little bit, and some of the most remarkable opera arias have been composed for baritones. And finally, we find there in the third scale, down there, we find the bass. The bass with the lowest and deepest voice ever heard in a man, all right? Tenors, of course, Josep Carreras from Barcelona and Plácido Domingo from Madrid. Those are, in my opinion, my favorite ones.
And both of them are, we are lucky that they're still alive. Let's start, for instance, just by coincidence, you know, with Josep Carreras, because you mentioned that one, Federico. He was born in December the 5th in 1946. He's actually 77 years old. And how can I say this? He's, to me, he's a fighter, because he's a leukemia survivor. And there is a big foundation behind him. So this is a consequence of the fame that he's got because of his voice. But could you give us a little bit of his life and how he got famous, and how was the purpose of founding this foundation he made because of the leukemia? And I'm pretty sure that you know more than us about this, so please tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I have to say that José Carreras has always been a wonderful tenor with that clean tune. That is one of the things that even some remarkable people, as Luciano Pavarotti, said that. You see, he really loved the cleanness of the voice, the tune of José Carreras. The thing is that after that illness, you see, he's actually a survivor. He came back to sing again, you see. And the thing is that I remember he was actually playing the role of Don José, the lieutenant of Carmen, singing at the Liceo of Barcelona. And then after the end, you see, when he finally came to the stage, people were just, I mean, clapping and giving to him the greatest ovations ever. And then he said, I'm so happy. There was a lot of emotion there. And then he said, okay, I accept all these warm feelings from people, but I hope that it's not about griefs or sorrows just because I went over the illness. I really hope that they actually do what they do, because I'm still a great tenor, and that's what I want to be. Unfortunately, he was also known because of one of those things that we call in the Spanish language, gallo. Gallo is actually that moment in which, in a very unexpected way, the tenor is just reaching the highest note, and suddenly the voice is broken, totally broken. Wow! Yeah, it sounds like a rooster. And the gallo of José Carreras, unfortunately, is there on YouTube. And let me also tell
is that
you,
right?
It's right there. Yes, you can find that.
Oh God! And internet.
That is not fair. That is not fair, because he had wonderful performances. Let me also tell you, I also remember that moment, and the video is somewhere there, in which he recorded West Side Story with Kirite Kanaba, the mezzo coming from New Zealand, and Leonard Bernstein, composer and conductor, recording in the Deutsche Grammophon CD. You find how Leonard Bernstein was not very happy with Grumpy Lenny, was not so very happy with José Carreras or Josep Carreras. And those moments, you see, those are just anecdotes of José that are not fair, because he did great things before and after that.
Yeah. Okay, that is really funny. That's but how do we say in English that word that you mentioned, gallo?
I've been actually trying to find the word, and it's literally I'm actually talking to my American friends. I think you say broken voice, basically.
Broken voice,
because we say gallo, rooster, because it sounds like a rooster that you're actually singing and going higher. When he was singing, actually, Maria, West Side Story, Maria, no, Maria, and that is actually what we call a rooster, a broken voice, yeah.
So we have talked a little bit about Josep Carreras, but we have the last, which is Plácido Domingo, from Madrid, one of I would say, to me, as I'm not an expert, I love his voice. I mean, I think he has an amazing, amazing voice. Warm, tender, powerful. I don't know.
Well, Plácido Domingo is a prodigy. I mean, it's something, is not under discussion. I mean, we can actually talk about many extraordinary tenors in the history of classical music. And there is one little thing out there that tells you how Plácido, as many other tenors, or we know many other singers, he started to sing Spanish zarzuela because daddy and mommy were singers in some of those original companies singing zarzuelas. And that was just the beginning of the story, because right now Plácido Domingo is the most complete tenor ever in the 20th century. I could give to you the names of some of those. We were talking before about Luciano Pavarotti, how he was an extraordinary singer in Italian language and occasionally in French. Plácido Domingo has been singing operas in Spanish, Italian, French, German, Portuguese, and even Guarani language, you see, from South America, which is something absolutely unthinkable. I could tell you how, for me, I have to admit that it becomes a kind of a honor, or let's say a little bit of pride to say that a Latino, Hispanic tenor who could be just specializing in those, you know, Spanish romantic songs and Italian arias and French romantic. I mean, he's considered one of the best performers of Wagner's operas. Okay, we talk about Wagner. Okay, we are not talking about a kind of a local composer with easy listening compositions. We talk about the dimension of the operas of Wagner are extraordinarily sung by Plácido Domingo or even Beethoven's Fidelio. I mean, we all know that he's one of the most extraordinary singers when we talk about Puccini and Verdi and Bizet and so many others. But then going into the German world and also to sing occasionally in Russian language, I mean, Plácido Domingo is a chameleon in a metaphorical way. I mean, he does whatever he wants to do in a wonderful way. And that is what it is. And that is it's a mathematical fact.
We know that he's now 83 years old and he's retired here in Madrid, but he's doing some occasional performances now and then, is he?
Yes, exactly. The point is that, I mean, he's now in his early 80s and then he's still okay to sing, which is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, now actually when you have, I assume that we have that age, you don't really, really need to perform the whole opera. Just go to some of those wonderful places where you can, auditoriums or theaters where you can actually perform and give those recitals to give those, you know, you just need next to you a piano player and that's it. Or why not a big orchestra and to sing. Several pieces, the highlights, and with, just by himself or maybe with some of those good friends. Because also it's important to say that Plácido Domingo has internationally, he's actually leading some of those contests of new generations of singers, extraordinary singers, and giving facilities to those new talents.
Mm-hmm, great.
You have said, yes, that him and his friends, but if we talk about friends, there is a great trio of tenors that we have talked about. You have talked about Luciano Pavarotti, Josep Carreras, and Plácido Domingo, the three famous tenors.
Yes, actually, let me tell you, before actually, the three tenors was something absolutely great. I mean, in musical terms and in economical terms, you see, there was a kind of a...
That's very important, yeah.
Yeah, because you know that, I mean, all these divos and divas of the opera, supposedly, they all hate each other and they don't really like each other. We could see that in Boston, that is a kind of a... urban legend. When they finally see the money, I mean, there are no reason to be enemies, you see, because they all actually get a lot of money. We could see that in those the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games in Barcelona. We could meet there Plácido, Giuseppe, Montserrat, and Teresa together singing the highlights, a potpourri or the highlights of the opera. That was actually a cool experience. And then that was the idea, because a few years after, we could find those three tenors who were supposed to be rivals. They became good friends in the name of culture in the name of music and in the name of money. Of señoras y señores, Plácido, Giuseppe, and Luciano together forever. It was a kind of a experience, cool experience in the Terme di Caracalla in Rome. And that was such an amazing hit from every perspective. You see, selling and selling CDs everywhere and DVDs that it had to be. I mean, they finally had to go all over the world and to keep singing and singing in different places all over Europe, the Americas, Asia, the three tenors. Plácido, Domingo, and Luciano, and that was a very, very, very cool thing. We have to say that.
So that happened. That's just because of one performance, as you mentioned, in Caracalla, that led to a world tour among the three of them.
Totally.
Yeah. And do you have any idea? I mean, we are now discovering that you are a real expert in all this field. Do you have any news or any knowledge about if there was any kind of problems when they were touring around among them, or they just went along because of the fame and the money?
Yes, absolutely. I mean all those opera divos, they are famous because of those kind of small eccentricities. We all know that Pavarotti used to travel with, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 pieces of luggage, which is just absolutely insane. That is, I mean, that has to be respected. All that kind, those things that they just have every singer has those eccentricities that they have to be respected somehow. Okay, uh-huh. But we have to say that they are, at least what they were showing to us is that they were coexisting, the three of them, in a very nice way. They got used to a new experience. Mm-hmm. You have to consider that it becomes quite cool to be considered the three best singers in the world. Okay, I'm talking about male voices. I mean, not every tenor is able to say that. I mean, I know mm-hmm. that there are many others that are so good or probably better than they were, but they were officially the best three tenors of the world. And that means fame, reputation, money, and celebration.
Right. So I just had to laugh when you said that when Luciano Pavarotti was arrived with 20 or 30 pieces of luggage to any concert or whatever, it was outrageous. You know what's the expression in America when that happens? It's like, oh, Diana Ross is coming into town, because she was also famous because carrying so much luggage with her in every concert and every city that she used to go. So yeah, yes, that made me laugh. So it could be the equivalent, you know, in different fields.
Yeah.
So Federico, as you know, this podcast is called Spanish Loops, and most of the cities, they have their opera houses. We know that beautiful futuristic one that there is in Valencia, made by Santiago Calatrava, with nice acoustics, etc., etc. But we know that here in Madrid we have the Royal Theater, which is our opera house. It was renovated because of the 1992 Madrid cultural capitality that happened that year. Actually, it was finished a year after, to be honest. But that is the temple in Madrid for the opera performances and for the opera season. And also, you mentioned before about the, which theater is for the Spanish opera?
We have the three temples here of classical music, yep. Teatro Real, the Royal Opera House. Then we have Teatro de la Zarzuela, which is the Spanish of operetta. And then we have a third one, which is really new, the Symphonic Hall, the Symphonic Auditorium, which is all, that is all about contemporary architecture. But the two classic buildings from the middle of the 1800s, actually the 1850, are Teatro de la Zarzuela and Teatro de la Opera.
Well, chicos, so here we are making a recap, very quick recap about our friend, guest, colleague, Federico Garcia. His website is spainfred.com. And guys, if you just want to come here and have, including a musical tour regarding, those specific histories about things related with music in Madrid, Federico is an expert that we have already heard his histories. You just have to get into your computer and type again, spainfred.com.
Federico, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great learning experience, and it's been a real, real pleasure.
Likewise, Federico. We cannot thank you enough for your generosity and your, giving your time to cooperate in one of these episodes of Spanish Loops. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, amigos. Thank you for this wonderful opportunity. It became like something really, really enjoyable for me. So thank you for calling me, and here I am ready for a future podcasting your wonderful Spanish loops. Thank you again to both of you.
And Francisco, I assume that we have our virtual marriage here, and we're going to meet again next week with another episode of Spanish Loops, aren't we?
We shall continue talking next week. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you, Jorge. Thank you, Fede. Adios, amigos.
Adios, amigos y amigas. Hasta la vista.
Bye.
We want to thank all our listeners for being there every week, letting us share in our talks. Follow us on Spanish Loops on Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your favorite platform.
And in Instagram, you can find us as the Spanish Loops Podcast, no spaces, all together. If you want to find us the quickest way, just Google Spanish Loops Podcast. You will find us. Hasta la vista, amigos.
See you next week.